He bought me a drink, we hit it off, and the rest is history.
Perfect. Exactly like we'd rehearsed. Unfortunately, our rehearsal hadn't accounted for an ex-boyfriend with a steel trap memory. I thought you hated wine, Clive said. You stopped drinking it after Millie Blair's party fiasco. Mild panic crossed Ivy's face.
I got over it. It's been years and, I've developed a new appreciation for it.
Clive's brows dipped. What was the name of the wine bar again? It's an underground spot in Shoreditch, I interjected smoothly. If I gave him a name, I wouldn't put it past him to check and see if I was actually there Saturday night. Only those in the know would have heard of it. And this underground spot doesn't have a name. Can't share it with people outside the inner circle. Bar rules. There were plenty of exclusive hidden bars in London with similarly draconian rules, so my lie wasn't out of the realm of possibility. How convenient. What about you? I turned the tables on him. Scarlett said she ran into you at the movies. Quite a coincidence. I live near that cinema, Clive said. I go there all the time. Really? What was the last film you saw there before last weekend? A beat of hesitation passed. The horror one with Riley Kay, I forgot the name. A House of Snakes? Yeah, that one. Funny, I leaned back, my pose deceptively casual. My friend was a producer on that film. It had a limited release in the UK, only shown in a handful of cinemas, all of them in central London. I believe the one you went to was in North London, wasn't it? Ivy and Scarlett's heads swiveled back and forth like spectators at a sporting event. I wasn't going to let Clive get away with whatever shit he was trying to pull. Coming after me was one thing, dragging Scarlett into it was another. Then I remembered wrong, he said coolly. Maybe I watched House of Snakes somewhere else. Either way, I'm glad I went to the cinema last weekend. Otherwise, I wouldn't have run into Scarlett, and we wouldn't be here. He smiled and draped his arm over the back of Scarlett's chair. Ivy shifted with discomfort while I waited for Scarlett to tell him off. She wouldn't let someone take such liberties this early into a first date.
Exactly.
She leaned into him with an answering smile.
I'm glad I ran into you too.
Clive's teeth gleamed like little white targets for my fist. What the actual fuck? She couldn't possibly like the bet. It hit me like a freight train. I'd forgotten about our wager, but it made sense why she was indulging Clive's delusions. Ivy and I weren't on a real date, so I didn't have to worry about scoring a second one. I could just say I had. Meanwhile, Scarlett was under the impression that she needed to work for hers. At least that was what I told myself, because the alternative explanation was too nauseating to contemplate. Since she didn't know Ivy was a cover, I had to make an effort to win, or she'd get suspicious. Did I mention that Ivy is studying environmental law at the University of London? I said. She's brilliant.
You got a lawyer to go out with you? Impressive.
Scarlett said. It was light-hearted enough to pass as a joke, but pointed enough for me to know it wasn't. I narrowed my eyes while Clive smirked.
Law student.
Ivy corrected with a laugh.
I mean, it's Asher Donovan. Who wouldn't want to go out with him?
Clive's smirk disappeared. A wisp of discomfort coasted through my stomach, but I washed it away with more wine. Ivy was playing her part. I couldn't fault her for that. Still, I wished she would have called me Asher instead of Asher Donovan. I shouldn't complain, considering how many doors the latter opened for me, but sometimes it felt a little dehumanizing, like I was a walking brand instead of a person. Scarlett's brow creased with a small frown. She slid a glance at me, her gaze oddly questioning, before she turned back to Ivy.
So, environmental law? Do you have a specialty?
She asked. Ivy lit up for the first time since she saw Clive.
Marine protection, but I'm interested in the management of hazardous substances and wastes, too.
For the next half hour, she regaled us with details about her courses while we ate our appetizers. Scarlett silent, Clive scowling, and me interjecting with the occasional, and wow. I was all for saving the environment, but truthfully, listening to the intricacies of the UN's High Seas Treaty while we ate gourmet crab cakes wasn't my idea of a good time. Ivy seemed oblivious to the growing tension. Thankfully, the server brought out our main courses and interrupted her before she could go into more detail about exploited fish stocks.
This lobster is delicious.
Scarlet speared a piece with her fork and held it out to Clive.
Here, try.
Thanks, babe. Clive shot me a smug look and ate the lobster tail straight off her fork. Scarlet and I reacted with simultaneous grimaces, but when I focused on her, her face had already smoothed into a smile.
Tell us about rugby,
she said.
I've always wanted to learn more about it.
She cast the bait, and he fell for it hook, line, and sinker. If there was one thing men loved, it was talking about themselves. While Clive extolled the virtues of rugby and his importance on the pitch, Ivy poked at her pasta with a frown. Ivy, darling, would you like more wine? I asked solicitously. The word darling tasted strange when aimed at someone who wasn't Scarlet, but I swallowed my misgivings. We were halfway through dinner, and it was time to take things up a notch. Scarlet's seeming fascination with Clive's rugby rant faltered.
Yes, please.
Ivy pushed her glass toward me. She might have hated wine at uni, but perhaps she had developed a new appreciation for it, because she gulped it down like a desperate woman who'd finally stumbled upon an oasis in the desert. The dinner dragged on. If I hadn't regretted the double date idea before, I sure as hell did now. Listening to Clive talk was insufferable. Seeing Scarlet stroke his ego with questions and encouraging nods was worse. I tossed back my drink and glared as she laughed at his stupid joke about a priest taking up rugby. Anyone could have seen the conversion's punchline coming.
Excuse me.
Ivy's chair scraped back with a rasp of wood against the carpet.
I don't feel too well. I'll be right back.
Concern leaked through my irritation. I'd been so focused on Scarlet and Clive, I'd neglected Ivy. Her face did look paler than when we'd arrived, but she hurried off before I could respond. Her departure cast an immediate pall over the table. Clive stared after her, then tossed his napkin on the table and stood. I have to use the loo, too. I'll be right back. 5 seconds later, he disappeared into the hall housing the toilets. Yeah, not suspicious at all. I didn't know why Ivy and Clive broke up, but judging by their reactions to each other, the attraction wasn't dead. I couldn't have planned it better myself. Maybe they'd rekindle their flame and Clive could leave Scarlet the fuck alone. Ivy was too good for that wanker, but if she was into that, then it was none of my business. Scarlet and I sat in silence, the spectre of our dates and 1,000 unspoken words hanging over us.
Ivy seems nice,
she finally said. She is, and Clive seems present. She snorted, an undignified sound that was at odds with her elegant appearance. The corner of my mouth tilted up. I loved her reactions. They were so real, so her. No artifice, no ass-kissing. Pure Scarlet.
I can't believe they used to date,
she said.
What a plot twist.
Maybe it's a sign.
Of what?
That we're on dates with the wrong people. My words stole the last semblance of pretense between us. They hissed and crackled like a blaze in a hearth, warming my skin and bringing a tint of red to Scarlet's cheeks.
That's not something you should say when we're still on our dates.
She glanced in the direction of the toilets. No Ivy or Clive yet. Perhaps. But am I wrong? I challenged. Don't tell me you can endure Clive's grandstanding about rugby. Rugby. I made a noise of disgust. It's violence disguised as a sport. All brawn, no finesse.
You're such a snob. Other sports exist besides football, you know.
Not good ones. A hint of a smile crossed her face.
You're insufferable.
But more sufferable than Clive Hart, be honest. My gaze burned into hers. Are you enjoying your date with him, or do you simply want to win our bet? The smile disappeared.
Why wouldn't I enjoy the date? He's good-looking, successful, and funny. The total package.
Funny? Sure, Clive was funny the way syphilis was funny, and his total package included a strong whiff of bullshit. the same bullshit I heard in Scarlett's response. That's not what I asked, I said softly. Scarlett's eyes flickered in the candlelight. They were the color of silver moonbeams, at times clear, at times obscured by wisps of clouds. Sometimes, finding her true feelings amongst the mist was impossible. Tonight, I saw right through it.
No.
The clouds parted, revealing a glimmer of vulnerability.
Not really.
Her answer was as close to an admission as she would allow. In this moment where our dates were gone and we could spin an illusion of normality. My heart pattered to an uneven beat.
Are you enjoying your date with Ivy?
She asked. No. I held her gaze. Not really. The clatter of plates and silverware retreated into the background. Scarlett's lips parted, and I felt it in my bones. A moment of perfect tension, stretched taut between our previous promises and our present desires. 2 weeks since our kiss. 2 weeks since we agreed to pretend it never happened. And yet, beneath the surface of our otherwise innocent conversation, the rolling thunder of attraction drummed on. Her reasons for disregarding the kiss were still valid. The consequences of not doing so were still threats. But it was easier to choose logic during daylight, when work and distractions formed a barrier between the head and heart. At night, that barrier dwindled, leaving us open to the possibility that consequences paled next to our wants.
You called her darling.
Scarlett's voice was smoke and velvet, threaded with a tinge of hurt.
You must be enjoying the date more than you admit, unless you use that endearment with everyone. Does it always work for you?
I wouldn't know. The satisfaction of getting under her skin with that tactic was minute compared to my exhaustion. I was tired of our games. I've only called one woman that and meant it. Scarlett's soft inhale was nearly my undoing. I didn't want to be in a crowded restaurant on a double date, surrounded by strangers and cosplaying indifference. I wanted to be anywhere else, as long as I was alone with her.
Hey, I'm sorry that took so long.
Ivy's apology jarred us out of our trance. Our gazes jerked away from each other, and the soft honesty of the moment disappeared in a puff of smoke. I pasted on a smile, trying not to look too annoyed as Ivy slid into her seat.
I think the wine doesn't agree with me,
she said.
I'm still a little nauseous.
I frowned. Her skin looked even more waxen than before, minus the dark flush crawling over her neck and chest. Do you want to call it a night? I asked. I can drive you home. I don't want you to stay if you're not feeling well. We weren't on a real date, but that didn't mean I was going to be a dick and leave her to fend for herself. She nodded, her expression miserable.
I'm sorry. I don't want to ruin everyone's night, but...
Don't worry about it. I'll get the check. A tingle of relief loosened the fist around my heart. Leaving the date meant leaving Scarlett, but at least I didn't have to pretend anymore. Before I could flag down our server, Clive reappeared. What's going on? Scarlett explained the situation. He didn't seem surprised, and I was reminded again of their suspicious timing. They'd left for the toilets and returned at almost the exact same time. I doubted they'd hooked up while they were gone, though that would explain Ivy's growing nausea, in my opinion. But something must have happened. Instead of staying and pursuing his vendetta against me via Scarlett, he shocked the hell out of us by saying, I'll take Ivy home. It's on my way anyway. He cast a sheepish glance at Scarlett. I'm sorry for bailing early, but I have an emergency at home. Rain check? The fact that no one called him out on the contradiction of driving Ivy home when he had an emergency was a testament to how off the rails the date had gotten.
Sure.
I could have sworn that was relief in Scarlett's voice.
I understand.
I'll take Scarlett home, I said before Clive offered to drive her as well. I wouldn't put it past the bastard to attempt a threesome or something similar. Dinner's on me. I had a big payday earlier this week. He didn't miss the subtle dig referencing the money he'd lost at the race. Resentment flared anew in his eyes, but he kept his mouth shut. I wasn't under the illusion I'd seen or heard the last of him. I'd lucked out with the Ivy situation tonight, but Clive was petty enough to keep coming back until I knocked him out for good. I'd deal with that tomorrow. For now, I allowed myself a measure of relaxation as he disappeared through the doors with Ivy, who went along with the change of plans silently.
Well, this didn't turn out the way I'd expected,
Scarlett said after I'd paid and we'd made it to my car. I'd had half a glass of wine, but I was clear-headed and sober enough to drive.
Do you think they...
Oh, yeah. I pulled out of the car park. The old flame is not dead. She huffed out a laugh.
I should be insulted, but I'm not.
Trust me, anything that takes Clive's attention off you is a good thing.
He's really not that bad.
That's what the Victorians said about adding boric acid to milk. Another startled laugh filled the car.
Asher Donovan, a scholar of the Victorian era. Colour me surprised.
I wouldn't say scholar. I flashed a quick grin. But I did watch several YouTube videos about it. 5 minutes of light-hearted conversation, and I was already having a better time than I'd had at dinner.
I hope no one recognized us at the restaurant,
Scarlett said.
And by us, I mean you.
Some definitely did, but as long as they're not paps, it should be fine. Most people have common decency. I was recognized all the time on the streets. Sometimes fans stopped me for autographs and pictures. However, I'd never had a stranger post a private moment of me online without my consent. The tabloids were the issue, not the average citizen.
I hope so.
Scarlett ran a hand over the sleek leather interior. I'd picked a low-key black Porsche for tonight. It was my go-to car for when I wanted something nice but not too flashy.
I don't understand guys' fascination with cars. Why do you need so many?
Some women collect shoes and bags, some men collect cars. I shrugged. I'm one of them.
Can't relate.
Laughter rumbled past my throat. It's not for everyone. I tapped my fingers on the wheel, debating whether to release the question sitting at the tip of my tongue. Screw it. Have you thought about getting your own? I know you don't like taxis. I trailed off, letting her fill in the gaps. It was a sensitive topic, but we weren't strangers to those. Luckily, Scarlett didn't appear offended.
I thought about it, but...
She shook her head.
No, I'd rather take the tube. Besides, city traffic is a nightmare.
Fair enough. I didn't push the issue. I'm happy you're doing the showcase. It should be a good time.
Me too.
Her face softened.
It's nice to sit in on rehearsals again, even if I'm only watching. It feels... I don't know. It feels like I'm part of something bigger than myself, and I haven't felt that way in a long time.
I know what you mean. It was one of the reasons why I loved football instead of, say, golf or tennis. Every team had its top performers, but at the end of the day, winning was a group effort. It was a brotherhood. At least it was supposed to be, when it wasn't weakened by perpetual infighting. God damn, Vincent. The indirect reminder of Scarlett's brother put an instant damper on my mood. If it weren't for him, we wouldn't be stuck on this merry-go-round of emotions. Hell, I probably wouldn't have met Scarlett in the first place. Life would be much simpler. However, the thought of never meeting her sent an unpleasant chill through my chest. We'd known each other for 2 months, yet I couldn't imagine a world where she didn't exist in my orbit. Even when caution kept us at arm's length, seeing her was the highlight of my week. I snuck a peek at Scarlett as we entered her street. She stared out the window, her brow furrowed, her expression seemingly lost in thought. I'd give Clive his 100 grand back in exchange for the ability to read her thoughts right now. The night had been a rollercoaster of surprises, but the elephant in the room, the quiet admissions we'd allowed ourselves before Ivy's return at dinner, remained undiscussed. I guess neither of us won the wager, I said, breaking the silence.
I guess not.
Scarlett pulled her attention away from the window as I pulled up in front of her flat.
But I'm sure Ivy will agree to a second date if you call her up. You're the Asher Donovan.
Her tone contained light-hearted teasing, but her smile didn't reach her eyes. She was still distracted by something. I'm not sure she will, I said. And I'm not sure I want her to. The engine cut off, bathing us in silence. Moonlight poured through the windows and highlighted the emotions fluttering across her face. The elephant grew larger, pressing against the windows and into my lungs until it was hard to breathe. If there was ever a moment to rethink our pact, it was now. Come on, darling. Just when I thought Scarlet would give in to the haze thickening the air, she tore her gaze away from mine.
Thank you for the lift,
she said, her voice steady but her fingers shaking slightly as she unbuckled her seatbelt.
And for dinner, it's been an interesting night.
My eyes lingered on her for an extra beat before I faced forward again, my jaw tight. You're welcome. I didn't offer to walk her to her door, and she didn't look back as she scrambled out of the car and into the building like the hounds of hell were nipping at her feet. However, I did wait for the lights to switch on in her flat before I left. Frustration chafed beneath my skin. I couldn't marshal my thoughts into any semblance of order. They scattered all over the place, ping-ponging between reason and emotion, practicality and desire. I wish I had someone to talk to about this. My old teammates at Holchester weren't speaking to me, and Adele and Noah were on holiday with their families. Even if they weren't, I didn't know my teammates well enough yet to unload on them about my love life. That was one of the downsides of fame that no one talked about. The more success you gained, the fewer friends you had. It hadn't been a problem before. I'd never met a woman who made me question what I wanted the way Scarlet did. But now, I swiped a hand over my face as indecision took root inside me. Does this feel platonic to you?
We'll pretend the kiss never happened.
Are you enjoying your date with him?
You called her darling.
I'm not sure she will, and I'm not sure I want to. I made it halfway down the street before I came to an abrupt halt. Thankfully, there were no cars behind me. What the fuck am I doing? I didn't know whether it was the empty roads or the quiet night, but clarity unfolded with sudden, blazing sharpness. I wanted Scarlet. She wanted me. Yes, our relationship would have obstacles, and yes, overcoming them seemed impossible, but fuck it. How would we know unless we tried? Impossible things happened every day. Look at Eldora's royal couple. They overcame a centuries-old law to be together. Even my rise to stardom would have been deemed unfathomable. The solidly working-class boy from a working-class town, whose teachers were so certain he'd amount to nothing, growing up to become the highest-paid player in the Premier League. Every problem had a solution. I was determined to find ours. But in the meantime, I switched gears and pulled a sharp U-turn. My heart thundered in my throat as I parked in front of Scarlet's flat, cut the engine and ran upstairs. The main door was unlocked, which couldn't be safe, but I chose not to look a gift horse in the mouth. Please don't be asleep yet. If she wasn't up and I waited to say what I had to say, I might lose my nerve and we would end up right back in limbo. That couldn't happen. I knocked on her door. Once. Twice. My pulse was a relentless anvil against my veins, and the hammering worsened when Scarlet answered the door. She was still wearing her dress from dinner, but she was barefoot and makeup-free. Her eyes widened.
Asher, what are you...
She didn't get a chance to finish her question before I stepped forward, grabbed the back of her neck, and crushed her mouth to mine. A gasp of surprise traveled into my lungs, and there was a taut, suspended moment when I thought she might push me away. But then her gasp turned into a moan, and her lips parted for mine. And I knew nothing would be the same ever again.
Chapter 22. Scarlet. The second Asher's lips touched mine, I was lost. Every argument for why I should push him away, every piece of logic that had kept us at arm's length for the past 2 months, crumbled like a sandcastle beneath a tidal wave. We stumbled into my flat, our hands tearing at each other's clothes, our mouths hot and desperate with want. It was nothing like our first kiss. Our first kiss had been an exploration, a dip into the world of what if. What if we gave in to our attraction? What if we said fuck it and did what we wanted? Consequences be damned. This kiss was an explosion. Every guardrail I'd constructed, every promise I'd made to myself, incinerated with one touch. I heard the dim thud of my door slamming shut, but it was so far outside my realm of focus that it might as well have occurred galaxies away. Ash's hands burned a path down my back to the curve of my arse, and another gasp escaped when he lifted me with the ease of someone picking up a rag doll. Electric shivers rippled down my spine, and I instinctively wrapped my arms and legs around him as he carried me to my room without breaking our kiss. My flat had one bedroom, and the door was open, so he didn't have to guess where to go. Every step added to the need building between my legs. By the time we passed through the doorway, I was nothing more than a bundle of anticipatory pleasure strung together with lust. Asher pulled his mouth away from mine. I let out an involuntary whimper of protest, which elicited a soft chuckle as he laid me on the bed with exquisite agonizing care.
"Don't worry, darling."
The words feathered over my skin like tiny caresses.
"We haven't even started yet."
My entire body tightened at the dark promise in his voice. I watched, blood thrumming as he shed his trousers and boxer briefs. We'd lost my dress and his shirt somewhere between the living room and bedroom. I was clad in my black lace bra and thong set, the one I always wore for first dates, and Asher was, well, he was naked. The most glorious, mouth-watering type of naked a girl could dream of. If I hadn't been lying down, my knees might have buckled from the sheer visual pleasure standing before me. Broad shoulders, tapered waist, abs like chiseled marble, and those thighs. They looked like they could crush a freaking watermelon. My belly fluttered with a fresh wave of need. I'd never admit it, but I'd always thought footballers had the best physique out of any athletes. Slim, yet muscular, light, yet powerful. Asher proved all my theories right. My eyes tracked a light dusting of hair, down, down, past the ridges of his abs, all the way to his arousal. The air evaporated from my lungs. My God, even his cock was beautiful. Long and thick, perfectly proportioned to his body, its tip already leaking pre-cum. Another soft laugh interrupted my greedy perusal.
"Close your mouth, sweetheart,"
Masha drawled.
"There's plenty of time for that later."
A flush worked its way from my face to my toes at the insinuation. However, my embarrassment faded when he approached me, his eyes dark with a mixture of heat, amusement, and something else that slotted between my ribcage like a key into a lock. It wasn't my first time having sex, but the lead-up had never felt like this, like I was teetering on the precipice of something that could upend my entire world if I let it. And I wanted to let it. That was the scariest part. I'd tried so hard to prevent myself from getting to this point. Every time I gave in over the past 2 months, I immediately pulled back, but one side had to win the tug-of-war between my heart and mind. Right now, the heart was leading big time. The mattress dipped beneath Ash's weight. He hadn't touched me yet, but the warmth of his body curled around me in sensual tendrils as he dragged his gaze up my legs, over my stomach and to my face. I instinctively tensed. Self-consciousness coiled around me in a defensive shield. But unlike previous hookups, he didn't stop to gawk at the surgery scars on my hip and stomach, or struggle to hide a flash of revulsion. When his eyes met mine, they were filled with nothing except pure appreciation-fueled desire. And it was that more than anything else that ended the war inside me. Heart one, mind zero. No one had ever looked at me like that, like they could see past all my shields and pretenses to the imperfections I fought to hide. Like those imperfections didn't matter. And not only did they not matter, but they were a reason for appreciation instead of an obstacle. It was the first time anyone had seen me for me. Emotion tangled in my throat as Ash's lips brushed mine before he trailed a series of slow, excruciatingly gentle kisses down my throat and chest. He unclasped my bra with deft fingers along the way, and I bit back a moan when he turned his attention to my breasts. Every inch of skin flamed like it was fire and he was oxygen. The heat spread, slowly at first, then gathering speed as he reached the aching center between my thighs. My mind was so muddled. I didn't know when or how he'd slipped my underwear off, but I had enough faculties left to ask the question that had plagued me since he showed up at my door. "Why did you come back?" The words slipped out somewhere between nerves and anticipation. I had an inkling, but I wanted to hear him say it. I needed to know that if we opened Pandora's box, we would brave the consequences together. Asher paused, his breath soft against my parted thighs. The moonlight carved valleys and shadows across his face, but when he looked up, I saw the answer before he said it.
I came back for you.
Simple, honest, raw. Then he dove in and drove every other thought out of my mind. There was no time to reflect on his answer or the way it made my heart fold in on itself. There was only the silkiness of his tongue and the pleasure pouring through my veins and the sharp, undiluted need to be as close to him as possible. If I thought Asher was thorough with his kisses, it was nothing compared to the way he gave oral. He left no inch of flesh unattended, no piece of want unfulfilled as he ate me out like I was his last meal. When I craved more pressure, he added it. When I wished for more attention on a certain spot, he moved there. It was like he had a crystal clear look inside my mind, and my defenses were no match for his targeted onslaught. Please, I gasped. I grasped his hair, desperate for any hold that would keep me from slipping too far too fast. I can't. Fuck. He dragged his teeth across my clit, and only the steel grip of his hands on my hips kept me from shooting off the bed. Electricity shot through me, causing tears to pool at the corners of my eyes. My words devolved into unintelligible moans as Asher soothed me with gentler laps of his tongue.
Fuck, sweetheart, you're so wet.
He groaned, the sound rumbling through me like a match to gasoline. I was still shivering from the after effects when he sucked my already swollen clit into his mouth, and the world splintered again. I cried out, my back arching up again. But no matter how hard I bucked or how many times I instinctively tried to scoot away, he dragged me back, his mouth and tongue and teeth working in tandem as he continued his brutal, delicious assault against my senses. My mind was fracturing, its hold on reality slipping with every lick and suck. I was so soaked I almost didn't notice when he pushed two fingers inside me. They slid in with little resistance, but when he curled them just so, pressing against my most sensitive spot, my orgasm tore through me with blinding ferocity. Another sharp cry clawed up my throat, but it was drowned out by pleasure, so intense it seemed to unravel straight from my core. Wave after wave rushed through me, stealing the breath from my lungs and filling my vision with bursts of light. I dimly heard the rustle of clothes and the rip of foil. Fireworks were still exploding behind my eyes when Asher tucked a pillow under my hips and pressed the tip of his cock against my pussy. The orgasm had wrung me out, but that didn't stop a whimper from escaping. As good as the oral had been, I needed more. I needed something to fill the empty ache inside me. Asher's lips grazed my ear.
Hold on tight.
My anticipation pulled tight into a painful knot, but I didn't get a chance to respond before he pushed inside me with a smooth thrust. This time, my gasp only made it out halfway. It cut off into a half-moan, half-squeal that would have embarrassed the hell out of me had I had enough presence of mind to be embarrassed. Since I didn't, I could only cling to him for dear life as he settled into a hard, relentless rhythm, my nails digging into his shoulders, my hips rising to meet his. The headboard slammed against the wall every thrust, and the sound of flesh slapping flesh mingled with our harsh breaths and cries. I was sure I'd get a nasty note about the noise from my neighbor tomorrow, but I was so lost in the moment that I didn't care. My condition meant sex could be difficult and painful if I wasn't in the right position or my partner didn't know what they were doing. However, the wine from dinner and my orgasm had loosened my limbs, and Asher managed to hit my sweet spot every single time. Our bodies moved in sync like they were made for each other. I couldn't remember the last time I'd felt disconnected to someone during sex, and it had less to do with the physicality of the act than it did with the emotions behind it. For once, I didn't feel the need to perform. I could simply bask in the sensations, and the result was so overwhelming that part of me was afraid I'd never be the same after this. Asher captured my mouth in a kiss.
God, you feel good,
he murmured.
Your pussy takes my cock so fucking well, sweetheart. I could fuck you all day and night and you would still be wet and ready for me, wouldn't you?
Heat pulsated in my core at the image he painted. Yes, I panted. My nails sank deeper into his skin. Please. He groaned again. Tension corded the muscles of his neck and shoulders. His hands dug into my hips, and I could tell he was on the verge of breaking. That knowledge, combined with the taste of myself on his tongue and the deep strokes of his cock, set me off for the second time that night. This time, my orgasm was less like a wave and more like a tsunami. It started in the pit of my stomach and slammed through the rest of my body with such force my toes literally curled. A scream ripped from my throat. My body bowed from the intensity as Asher increased his speed, and I felt his cock throb inside me before he came with a guttural cry. He collapsed next to me, and we lay there during the come-down, our bodies flushed with sweat, our chests heaving for oxygen as I tried to recover from what was hands down the best sex of my life.
"Your neighbor is going to hate us,"
he said after what could have been a minute or an hour. I'd lost sense of time. I was still floating on a high, my limbs weightless with exhaustion, but a laugh bubbled from my chest nonetheless. "I thought the same thing earlier." Asher turned his head to look at me.
"You were thinking of your neighbor while we were having sex?"
My laugh intensified at the insulted look on his face. Only for a moment. I didn't think she'd appreciate the headboard slamming. I leaned over and gave him a quick kiss. "Don't worry. I was focused on you the majority of the time."
"Thanks,"
he said dryly.
"You really know how to stroke a guy's ego."
But a glitter of amusement lit his eyes, and I couldn't hold back a grin of my own. After-sex conversations were often so awkward, but I could lie here and talk to him all night. "I'm not going to make a dirty joke," I said. "You set it up too easily for me."
"Exactly. I love dirty jokes."
Asher shifted onto his side, and I sucked in a surprised breath at what I felt against my leg.
"Among other things."
"How are you hard again already?" I demanded, even as a tingle of renewed lust shot through me. "You just came." Laughter vibrated through the room.
"Stamina. It comes with the territory."
His voice softened into smoke.
"Now be a good girl and suck my cock clean."
It was like he'd flipped a switch with those 10 words. The levity instantly vanished, replaced by thick, heady tension. A flame ignited in my core as his earlier words surged up in my consciousness.
"Close your mouth, sweetheart. There's plenty of time for that later."
Oxygen thinned, and I swallowed at the thought of taking him in my mouth. He wasn't fully hard yet, but he was still intimidating enough that my thighs clenched. Nevertheless, I didn't take my eyes off his as I rose onto my knees and straddled him. I hadn't gotten to where I was in life without a boatload of determination and a certain taste for challenges. Asher's expression didn't change as I grasped him with both hands and stroked him to full length, but his breathing visibly quickened when I rubbed my thumb across the pre-cum gathered at his tip. He was still slick from our previous activities, but I used the pre-cum as additional lube. I twisted and squeezed, pumping him with long, firm strokes until his hips bucked and he let out a strangled noise. The thrill of pulling that reaction from him pooled between my thighs, the squelch of my hands sliding over his cock, the way he fisted the sheets in an attempt to maintain control, the sheer heat and size of him.
"Enough teasing."
Asher's steely voice halted my movements.
"Suck my cock, Scarlet."
Oh, God. My clit throbbed at the harsh command, and I didn't bother protesting, not when I was dying to taste him as much as he'd tasted me earlier. My breaths left me in little pants as I eagerly swelled my tongue around his cockhead. I whimpered with need at the taste, and my body buzzed to life at the sound of his groans. I kept my hands wrapped around him as I bobbed my head up and down and alternated between licking and sucking. I smiled with satisfaction when his hands finally tangled in my hair. I worked him deeper down my throat, but I eventually hit a point where my gag reflex kicked in. Fresh tears sprung to my eyes and drool leaked from the corners of my mouth as I choked on half his length. Asher's grip loosened, giving me an out, but I paused only long enough to catch my breath before I dove in again. Like I said, determination and challenges. I thrived on both.
"Fuck, that's it."
Asher tightened his hold again when I sucked harder. I didn't manage to take all of him, but he filled my throat so completely that my moan came out as a needy hum.
"You drive me so fucking wild,"
he groaned.
And you don't even know it?
My muffled response got lost beneath a loud curse and grunt when his orgasm hit. His hips slammed up and I choked again as bursts of cum hit the back of my throat. My vision blurred, but I swallowed hungrily, trying to keep up as he came and came until he finally sagged, and I let his cock slip from my lips. I pushed myself up and wiped my mouth, another smile flickering to life at Ash's expression of post-coital bliss.
You look pleased with yourself,
he said, an answering smile in his voice. So do you. I arched an eyebrow at his groin and earned myself a full-throated belly laugh. We cleaned ourselves up, sliding from lust to comfort with an ease that made my chest glow. When we finished, I curled up next to him, utterly exhausted but satiated in a way I hadn't been for a long, long time. A companionable silence filled the room. Drowsiness tugged at my eyelids, but I didn't want to sleep, not yet. Asher pressed a kiss on my forehead.
How are you feeling?
He murmured.
You need anything?
My chest clenched. It was a casual question, but it was the casualness that made it so intimate. He wasn't trying to care, he simply did. I'd been too wound up to appreciate it at the time, but I suddenly remembered how he'd placed the pillow beneath me earlier. It had gotten shoved to the side during my ministrations, but it helped with the pain that sometimes accompanied sex. Even in the throes of desire, he'd been thoughtful enough to think of my comfort. My chest squeezed harder. No, I said, honestly. I feel great. I might not in the morning. I hadn't had sex in ages, so who knew how my body would react later. But that was a problem for another day. I also had enough wits left to understand there was no turning back after tonight. A kiss was one thing, sex was another, especially the kind of sex we'd just had. We'd discarded our inhibitions and we'd have to face the consequences tomorrow. But right now, as Asher curled his arm around my shoulders and I tucked my head against his chest, I found it hard to care. Tomorrow would always be there. Tonight, it was just us. And I was going to enjoy every second of it while it lasted. Chapter 23. Scarlet. I awoke to an empty bed and the scent of sizzling bacon. The former was normal, the latter was unusual enough to rouse me from the dregs of sleep. I rarely slept over at anyone's house, and I rarely let anyone sleep at my house. So where did the bacon come from? I reluctantly cracked my eyes open. Sunshine streamed through the curtains, gilding the pile of clothes on the floor and the glass of water on the nightstand. The space beside me was still warm and the sheets smelled like sex and a trace of aftershave. Sex. Aftershave. Asher. Fragments of last night finally broke through my early morning mental fog. The double date with Clive and Ivy, Asher showing up at my door after he'd already dropped me off, and then... A smile spread before I could stop it. It was the morning after, aka the day of reckoning. I should be worried, but all I felt were little champagne bubbles of euphoria fizzing in my blood. I was still in bed, which meant my day technically hadn't started yet, though bacon and Asher were both tempting draws. I stretched my limbs. I was sore all over, both in a delicious way and a I'm-going-to-need-extra-Epsom-salts-for-this type of way. But it wasn't bad enough to take precedence over my hunger. After a minute of luxuriating in the quiet, I climbed out of bed and threw on the first oversized tee I found. I ducked into the bathroom to brush my teeth and make sure I didn't look like a gremlin before I padded barefoot to the kitchen. I stopped in the doorway, my stomach flipping at the sight before me. Asher manned the stove, clad in only boxer briefs. The muscles in his back flexed as he plated the bacon, and my stomach flips morphed into full somersaults. Forget porn, this was what women wanted. I soaked in the sight of his tousled hair and tanned skin for an extra beat before I made my presence known. Making yourself at home, I see, I teased. I entered the kitchen and slid onto one of the island counter stools. Asher turned, his face breaking into a smile when he saw me.
I figured you'd be less likely to kick me out if I bribed you with bacon, eggs, and sausage.
A hint of sleep roughened his voice, which really added to the ambiance, in my opinion. I could get used to waking up like this. He slid a plate and silverware toward me. I accepted it gratefully, my mouth watering at the heap of food. He'd cooked the bacon exactly the way I liked it, crispy but not too crispy, with just enough fat to stave off unappealing dryness. The strips glistened next to two pieces of perfectly seared sausage and a small mound of scrambled eggs. "If you hadn't forgotten the tea, I would have thought you were psychic," I quipped. "You cooked everything perfectly. Thank you."
"Ah, the tea."
Asher snapped his fingers.
"How could I forget the drink of the gods?"
He grabbed a mug off the counter and placed it in front of me. Black tea with a dash of milk and sugar on the side. "Perfect. Never mind. You are psychic." I reached for the mug but stopped when he stared at me, his brow furrowing. Self-consciousness prickled my skin. What? Had my bleary eyes deceived me in the bathroom mirror? Did I have a giant pillow crease marring my cheek or a line of dried drool at the corner of my mouth?
"Your shirt."
Asher's mouth twitched.
"Are you talking about the planet or the dog?"
I glanced down, confused, until I realized I was wearing my Justice for Pluto t-shirt. Karina had gifted it to me after I bought her a stuffed penguin from the Bronx Zoo store during my holiday in New York. My shoulders relaxed. "The planet. You see?" I pointed my fork at him, my breakfast temporarily forgotten. "You called it a planet. That's because it is a planet. I'll never forgive the IAU for demoting Pluto to a dwarf planet."
"Isn't a dwarf planet also a planet?"
"It's not the same. It's like moving from the Premier League to the EFL. British football was divided into several leagues. The Premier League was at the top. The EFL, or the English Football League, occupied the next level down."
"I see."
Another tiny smile came and went.
"I didn't realize you were so, passionate about Pluto."
"It's my favorite planet. The smallest, the most overlooked. It was the underdog of the solar system, and it deserved a little love. Why should Earth and Mars get all the glory? I did an entire school presentation on it back when it was still the ninth planet from the sun. I had photos. I stayed up all night painting styrofoam balls. My science teacher said it was the best planetary presentation she'd seen in years. Then you know what happened?" Asher shook his head, looking alarmed. "The very next year, the IAU demoted it. They said it wasn't a planet anymore." My indignation swelled at the injustice. "Can you believe that? Structures exist for a reason. Growing up, I was taught that there were 9 planets. Then one day, they just went ahead and changed it to 8. How is that fair? It's not. Pluto deserves better. Hence, justice for Pluto." I gestured at my shirt. "I don't like it when people arbitrarily change long-standing rules."
"I don't know if planetary classifications are necessarily rules."
Asher held up his hands when I glowered at him.
"I mean, you're right. Justice for Pluto."
"Thank you."
"Remind me never to argue with you about astronomy or rule books. You're quite terrifying when you get rolling on those subjects."
He said this with a straight face, but his eyes twinkled the tiniest bit. Blood rose to my neck and cheeks. It occurred to me that we'd had sex for the first time last night, and I'd just spent a full 5 minutes ranting about planets.
"I like seeing this side of you."
Asher brought another plate over and sat next to me. His knee touched mine, and he looked so at home in my kitchen that little bursts of warmth flickered in my veins. "Their nerdy, rambling side?" I asked.
"The unguarded side."
The corner of his mouth lifted.
"You can ramble about Pluto all you'd like. I won't judge too much."
I fought a smile and lost. We were floating on the last wisps of post-coital bliss. Soon our feet would have to touch the ground, and we'd have to face reality. For now, as we ate breakfast side by side, with the sun streaming through the windows and the air redolent with the aromas of home-cooked food, we were content. I hadn't brought a guy home since I broke up with my ex, and Ash's presence was almost overwhelming. His muscled frame filled the room, sucking up all the oxygen and making it impossible to breathe without inhaling him into my lungs. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. I was a private person and I guarded my personal space fiercely, but instead of rankling me, Ash's company made my bachelorette flat feel just a little less lonely. "What are your plans for the day?" I asked, taking what I hoped was a casual sip of tea.
"Hanging out with you,"
Asher said easily.
"If you want me to, of course."
Oh, he was good. Not only that, he was genuine, which made it that much worse for my poor heart. I suppose I could keep you company for a bit, I said with feigned reluctance. My reading will have to wait. His eyes crinkled at the corners.
I appreciate your magnanimity.
Since hanging out was the vaguest activity in existence and he didn't offer ideas for what we should do after breakfast, I gave him a quick tour of the flat. There wasn't much to see, besides the kitchen, living room, bathroom, and bedroom, which he was already intimately familiar with. The only place of note was the box room I'd converted into a mini library. I didn't have a lot of space, so I only bought physical copies from my favourite authors or books I'd already read and loved on Kindle.
This is the neatest house I've ever seen.
Asher stared at my painstakingly organised collection of books. They were alphabetized by the author's last name, followed by the book height, and then colour. Have you seen your place? It's spotless.
Yeah, but I have people who help. This is all you.
He swiped his thumb over a shelf. It came away dust-free.
Incredible.
I like cleaning, I said, half embarrassed, half pleased. I tended my library the way some people tended their gardens. It's soothing. It makes me feel like, I don't know, like I'm in control. I couldn't control the messes in my life, but I could clean them up at home. Spilled milk, several swipes of a towel, and it was gone. Muddy footprints, nothing a good mop wouldn't fix. I could snap my fingers, figuratively speaking, and return things to the way they were. That power provided a small measure of comfort in a world where chaos was the only certainty.
I get it,
Asher said. He touched the spine of one of my Leo Agnelli books, the same one he'd picked up and handed to me before our first training session. God, that seemed like a lifetime ago.
That's how I feel about driving.
I read the tabloids often enough to know he had a penchant for street racing. Several high-profile crashes had earned him a reputation for recklessness, though it hadn't stopped Blackcastle from paying an arm and a leg for him anyway. I hadn't seen news of any crashes or street races he'd been involved in recently, so maybe he wasn't part of that scene anymore. I hope so. Before we met, I hadn't cared. If he wanted to race, then he'd race. It was his life he was gambling with. Now, dread curdled in my gut at the thought of anything happening to him. Theoretically, his checkered history with cars and speeding should have turned me off given my hang-ups about those issues. But I couldn't reconcile that rash, daredevil tabloid version of him with the thoughtful, caring man who'd researched chronic pain after I told him about my accident, and who'd hired the same chauffeur to take me to and from our training sessions because I wasn't comfortable with strange drivers. I'd been a passenger in Ash's car multiple times, and he'd always followed the rules to a T. I'd never felt uncomfortable or scared, which was saying a lot because even the smallest things set me on edge. The tabloids weren't the most trustworthy source. Maybe there was more to Ash's racing than met the eye. Or maybe I was naive. I was cycling through ways I could ask him about it when he picked up a photo from the top of my bookshelf.
Is this your mum?
5-year-old me was dressed as a fairy princess, tiara and all. My mother stood next to me, her face glowing with pride. Yes, that was taken before my first ballet recital. My face softened at the memory. She was so proud that she took me out for ice cream after. If you knew my mother, you'd know what a big deal that was. She is not a dairy or junk food fan, at all. Asher examined the photo more carefully.
You were adorable.
Were? I teased. He set the photo down and faced me again.
I think you've graduated from adorable to something else.
Warm honey filled my veins. The low pitch of his reply chased away our light-hearted morning and resurfaced memories of what we did last night. The things he made me feel and the uncertainty we'd unleashed. We'd tiptoed around the elephant in the room all morning. Neither one of us wanted to break the spell, but we had to leave our bubble eventually. Before I could think of a witty reply or a tactful way to bring up our relationship. Friendship? Situationship? Asher's phone rang.
Excuse me.
He said after he checked the caller ID.
I have to take this.
The tension cracked, giving me space to breathe more freely. No worries, I'll be here. He answered the call in the next room while I worried my lip between my teeth. I'd never had a morning after talk. I usually went in knowing what to expect or slipped out before the other person woke up, so what should I say when Asher came back? Should I Google it? Did the internet have useful advice, or was it going to lead me astray like the time it told me shrimp was impossible to overcook? Spoiler, it was, in fact, very possible to overcook shrimp. Asher returned, and all my half-baked conversation starters died in my throat when I noticed how pale he was. What's wrong? I asked.
It's my dad.
He swallowed, his expression dazed.
He had a heart attack. Chapter 24. Asher. I didn't protest when Scarlett insisted on coming with me to Holchester. Normally I wouldn't subject anyone to a 3-hour drive with the worst, most anxious version of myself, especially when I was sure they were offering out of politeness and not a genuine desire to give up their Saturday for someone else's family emergency. But when she'd offered, she'd done so with such sincerity, I couldn't say no, and I didn't want to make the 3-hour drive alone. So I accepted. We didn't talk much during the ride, but her presence helped calm some of the thoughts raging in my head. My father, who'd never been sick for more than a few days in his life, had had a heart attack. We hadn't spoken since my last visit to Holchester, when he'd stormed out of the kitchen and I'd left without making amends. Regret rattled through me. My mother hadn't provided many details over the phone. She'd only said he was in the hospital. But what if our last words to each other were said out of anger? What if he was gone by the time I got there? My knuckles turned white around the wheel.
You can drive faster if you want,
Scarlett said, breaking the silence.
I'll be fine, I promise.
I shook my head. We're almost there. It'll be slower if I sped and got pulled over. I was already going faster than I normally would when she was in the car. She said she'd be fine, but I didn't want to stress her out, and getting a ticket from some traffic officer on a power trip wouldn't do anyone any good. Scarlett's worried stare bore a hole in my cheek, but she didn't bring up the issue again. She did, however, call ahead and speak to someone at the hospital, so that when we arrived, we were escorted directly to my father's floor without causing a commotion or tipping off the paparazzi. My mother sat in the hall, twisting her hands in her lap. She jumped up when she saw me, red rimmed her eyes, and she wore her pajamas with a coat thrown on top. She must have gone straight to the hospital without changing first.
Oh, Asher.
She swept me up into a hug. I'd always considered her a strong person, but her body felt unbearably frail in the fluorescent-lit hallway.
Thank you for coming so quickly.
Of course. I squeezed her, my heart in my throat. How is he?
He's stable, thank the Lord.
My mother pulled back, her eyes glossy.
We were having breakfast like usual. I made him a spot of tea and we were talking about going to France for holiday. I turned for a second to check on the kettle and heard a crash. When I turned back again, he was on the floor.
I hugged her again, my own chest tight. It's okay. You'll be okay. Guilt lodged in my gut for not living closer and abandoning her for London. I had my reasons. But what if something happened to my parents and I couldn't make it back in time? I was their only child, and the rest of our family lived elsewhere in the UK or abroad. Besides each other, I was all they had. I didn't hate my father. I just wished our relationship was different. Plus, my parents had been married for over 30 years. If one of them was gone, I wasn't sure the other would survive. My mother drew in a deep breath and straightened her shoulders. She was a strong believer in maintaining a stiff upper lip, and her tears visibly subsided as she locked down her emotions again.
You're right. He'll be okay,
she said.
Of course he will. He's already out of the woods. The doctor said they're keeping him for monitoring just in case, but he should be home within a day or two.
She sniffled and wiped her cheeks with the back of her hand.
Forgive me. I don't know what came over me, crying in public like that. My Lord.
Now that she was in control once more, she realized we weren't alone. She glanced past me at Scarlett, who stood a respectful distance away. Surprise flashed across her face before her earlier weepiness morphed into intrigue.
I'm sorry, I don't believe we've met,
she said.
I'm Pippa, Asher's mum. It's nice to meet you, ma'am. I'm Scarlett, Asher's friend,
Scarlett said politely.
Please, call me Pippa. I can't stand being called ma'am. Reminds me of my mum, and no one wants that.
My mother shuddered before she examined Scarlett with an eagle eye. Uh-oh. I recognized that look. That was her, my baby boy is almost 30 and still hasn't given me grandchildren, so I'm going to play matchmaker whenever I can, look. I almost would have preferred she continued to sob. Why don't we look for...
Thank you for coming with Asher,
my mother said, interrupting my attempt to steer us toward another topic.
That's very kind of you. It's no trouble at all. That's what friends are for. Indeed. Were you with him when he got the news?
Scarlet's smile faltered while I suppressed a grimace. There was only one realistic reason why we'd be together this early on a Saturday morning. But neither of us wanted to confirm it for my mother, of all people.
Yes, we were having breakfast.
Almost true, since we'd finished breakfast by the time I got the call.
I see.
My mother pounced on that tidbit of information like a starving lioness on prey.
Quite early for breakfast on a weekend. Quite a long drive from London to Holchester, too.
She cast a pointed look at my outfit. I was wearing the same dress shirt and trousers from last night's date while Scarlet was in a t-shirt and jeans. A toddler could have put this two and two together.
We're both morning people,
Scarlet said, her voice bright.
And the drive wasn't too bad. The roads aren't busy this time of day.
We avoided looking at each other so we didn't simultaneously combust from the awkwardness. Her cheeks were dark red, and I imagined mine were a similar shade.
I suppose not.
My mother didn't sound convinced.
Now, I hope you'll forgive me for being blunt.
Oh, fuck.
But how long have you and Asher been friends?
My mother managed to place the verbal equivalent of air quotes around the word friends without changing her tone.
Because, you know, it's quite difficult for him to meet women he's actually interested in. He's never brought anyone home before.
Technically, we're not. She cut me off again.
He's surrounded by testosterone every day, all day. I tell him, Asher, dear, it's time to meet a nice girl and settle down. You won't be a spring chicken forever, and I want to hold my grandbabies before I die. Does he listen? No.
She clucked her tongue.
So you can imagine how delighted I am that you're here. Tell me, how did you meet Asher? Do you have a boyfriend? Are you interested in children anytime soon?
Scarlet gaped at her, her eyes wide. Mother, I finally interjected. Please, now is not the time or place for this. Trust her to interrogate us about my love life in a hospital waiting room, hours after my father had a heart attack. No one compartmentalized their feelings better than Pippa Donovan.
That's what you've said for the past 5 years,
she retorted.
I'm simply making conversation. Scarlet doesn't mind, do you, dear?
Is Dad awake? I switched subjects before Scarlet was forced to answer. I'd like to see him.
Yes.
My mother's face sobered.
The doctor said he was lucky. It was a mild heart attack, and he regained consciousness soon after we arrived at the hospital. They're running tests on him now, but you should be able to see him. You go,
Scarlet said when I glanced.